We've travelled across Exmoor this morning to talk to James Daniel and Tom Burge about planning for the future. So James, just to start with, could you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to be advising farmers the way you do?
Yeah, thank you, Ian. So from a family farm in Cornwall, it's a sheep and beef farm, and typical upbringing, so always helping out on the farm. I guess results, A-levels were fairly good, so went on to study engineering at Harper Adams, and went on to work for a work in the industry, but was still coming back every weekend to farm. And got a bit sick of the travel associated with work, so decided to come back full time, and that gave us an opportunity at home to look at things, and it was decided that for all of our benefits, mine included, some time away would be good, and so I headed off to New Zealand, and I don't know, something... If we try to work out, have a look at the business at home and decide what do we want to, if I was going to go away, I really ought to be learning something useful I could bring back and add some value to the business at home. And luckily we decided that sort of grass or grazing management was an area at home that we had always struggled with. We had too much grass when we didn't want it, and then never enough when we needed it. And we were sort of making bales or running out of bales in between. So I headed to New Zealand to learn about grazing management, and actually ended up on a beef station, looking after 1,100 head of cattle, and learned an awful lot on that property, especially from the owner, a gentleman called Harry Weir, who really quite an innovator within sort of rotational grazing systems. Returned from there in 2016 and started working with some neighbours, and very simply with the neighbours, we had an opportunity with HDB to do a sort of farm innovation trial. So I had three neighbours, and we took one field, which we divided into paddocks, and we rotationally grazed that field. And then the field next door, we just let the farmer do whatever he was doing, which was set stock, maybe with a little bit of what we call shuffle grazing. So maybe they were rotating through two or three fields. Whereas in the rotational grazing field, we were moving every 2 to 4 days. So at the end of that trial, in that grazing season, we had around 50% extra live weight production per hectare from the rotational graze field. And in going through that process and working with those neighbours, then I realised that there was obviously quite a bit of potential here in the UK around reducing inputs and improving output. And the farmers I've been working with, I found that if we could overcome some of their objections, reasons why they weren't doing it already, then once they started to do it and built some confidence, it was a system they could keep doing. And so I thought, well, there's probably a business in this. Or they really ought to be a business in this. So Precision Grazing was founded then in 2016, and now in 2019 it's grown to employ three people plus myself. Two of those are based in Wales, Rhys and David, and then we've just been very lucky to take on an excellent graduate called Sarah Morgan, and she's based in Shropshire. So we now work with sheep, beef and dairy farmers across England and Wales, and we work both on-farm and through various sort of knowledge transfer and training events.
Well, the subject we're going to cover today isn't actually grazing management, it's planning for the future. So obviously there is an element of planning for the future in that. But how would you think that farmers, with Brexit coming up and looking ahead at their enterprises, how should they be looking forward and planning?
Yeah, that's what it is. There's been the more uncertainty that sits within the industry, maybe the more focus people have in terms of thinking about what's coming up and how they should plan for it. And we've certainly seen that change in our business. In 2016, we were very much, or I was very much, about grazing systems. And as the business has grown, and as our relationship and how we work with the farmers has changed, we are now looking for the reasons why and the need for the change, as opposed to just making change for change's sake. And so a lot of that need and reasons why comes from planning for the future. And it's sometimes quite a big subject, and it's a hard one to start with. So if we're on farm working with clients or individuals, we try and break it down. We generally try and break it down into two parts. And one of those is personal, and the second one is business. And we try and make a distinct line between the two parts. So we think about personal, we're thinking about what's the individual's ambitions, what do they like. But also, as important, it's sometimes easier to define what they don't like. And that can be in terms of work, in terms of their current system, their current lifestyle. And sometimes it's easier to start by taking off the negatives, what they don't want to be doing, and then you're left with what they want to do. So sometimes that's a good approach people can use. We find people that have got a little bit of direction, or people that like to engage or have desire to do future learning and skills training, that can be quite key, and that gives a little bit of direction and goal to their to them personally, a little bit of drive and a sense of achievement when they reach those targets. So personal development, that's key, and we have seen those people enjoy, are already or wish to become part of maybe discussion groups, and that can then start to bring that crossover between personal and business. So they've been quite useful. Along that personal side also, we encourage everyone to be able to place a value on their time. And sometimes the easy way to do that is to just define your current role and then go and look up in the job section for a similar role and see what that pays. Because if you were to step away from the business, then in theory that's what the business would have to pay for you to come back, or someone else to come in and fill your shoes. Once you've got a value on your time, then that value can be taken across and put into a business context. And it starts to make some of the decisions around the business maybe a little bit easier, and it maybe helps to balance the lifestyle work side of things a little bit more.
Quite often, when certainly the government is trying to encourage people to diversify and that sort of thing, it's the personal goals and ambitions and likes and dislikes aren't considered. So that's quite an interesting angle that you actually think about that. Because, for example, if you put a holiday let on your farm and you don't like dealing with the public, it's not much good.
No. Yeah, and I think perhaps that's where the crossover between personal and business. There's a massive correlation between people that enjoy what they do and people who are good at what they do. Now, that's great, but it doesn't mean that we can all go and do our hobbies as work, because there is a need. There's a personal need, and there's a need for the family to provide and to have an income. And maybe that's where some of the crossover with diversifications come in terms of bringing an income stream. So we find over the last few years, maybe the last 15 years, the funding and focus has been on the farm diversifying, but moving the farm into other activities to support, to prop up in some ways, the core farming business. And so in many cases, there's been good opportunities to do that. And the money that enterprise or diversification has realised has helped support the farm. And obviously the farm provided the capital to invest in that diversification, whether that's been doing up a barn as a holiday let. So now most of those easy options have probably been explored on farm. And we found that farm business performance through that time has probably stagnated. So the diversification sometimes is only really propping up the farming business. It's probably time now for the farming business to look to stand on its own two feet. And with the removal subsidy, that's going to be absolutely essential. Yeah, so from our personal review, we've probably got an account of what we like and what we don't like. That maybe gives us an idea of how we want to shape our working week. We've got accounted for our time. We've got a value for our time now. And so we can start to add that value into the business context. Again, say with alongside what we want our working week to look like. So in our business, some of the challenges we come across when we talk to people about their business is that maybe they don't have a good handle or a good account of what their current business output or productivity is. If you don't know where you are now, it's hard to imagine where you could be. So benchmarking is a pretty quick and easy way to get a handle on where the business is currently, both in terms of production, also in terms of financial. If you know where you are, then you need to, someone needs to provide you, or you need to find maybe an aspirational image for where the business could be. And again, discussion groups, farm visits, looking at people in the area that have maybe made some changes, are really good contacts and places to go to kind of provide that five-year plan. As we're working with consultants, and certainly we, on a farm level, we use a software program called Farmax, which helps us to model that farming context and to provide maybe a sort of a five-year plan is in terms of, well, in 5 years' time with some changes, we could be here. And some of those quantifiable changes are quite easy. We know that if we have a farm where the pH is averaging 5 and the farmer invested and took that to 6, then they could grow an extra 2 tonnes of dry matter per hectare, and we could put that into a terms of additional stock or reduction in inputs and supplements, and that has a direct financial implication. So when you're in your business, it's quite hard to see what it could become, and that's why it's so valuable to get out off the farm and to look at other businesses and pick up some ideas. And again, it's in the context of, what are they doing that you like, what are they doing that you don't like, how can you put that together in a system that works for you and fits into the context of your farm. So need to know where you are, might need some help, a bit of vision, just to find out where you could be. You're not going to get to the five-year plan in one jump. There's going to be little steps along the way. Some of those steps may involve a little bit of skills training in terms of learning new practices. So within livestock farming, grazing management is a pretty easy win on farm. It involves a little bit of confidence and skills training. And if, as part of the personal section, we've identified that that's what we like doing, then that can be really useful to take up. Learning a new skill is always, is for a lot of people, an enjoyable challenge and a sense of achievement. A nice correlation as well is, we know that farms that are good, or the saying should be, get good before you get big. So there's little reward for increasing farm size before the technical business efficiency is good. Once your business technically is very good, and as a farmer you're technically competent, then scale up. But don't scale up first, because if you haven't got the skills and maybe the support structure around you, then what you end up finding is that the rent bill starts to swallow. And when subsidy starts to come away from that rental income, then that'll make things even more challenging. So farms that are technically good will have the skills and the confidence to be able to scale up. So focus on getting good first. There's decision then around profit versus lifestyle. So the most awkward place on a farm quite often is to be in that 1.5 labour unit situation. So you've got the farmer who's full time, and maybe there's a family member that helps on the weekends and can cover the farm, and that's an awesome attribute to have. When that family member maybe wants to retire and do a bit less, sometimes that's quite a hard gap to fill. And inevitably the farmer or the farmer and his family end up picking up the slack, and then we're into long weeks and no breaks, and that's just not good, and that probably hopefully starts to conflict with some of those personal aspirations. So yeah, there's a level of farm investment that can help in reducing the day-to-day work. There's looking at stock with the right genetics that fit your system and fit the hours you want to work. So if you know, don't want to work past 5 in the evening, well, you maybe know that if you do a day of sheep work, it's the extra hour catching the lame sheep which pushes you over that 5 or 6 o'clock deadline. So if we work to remedy that, then all of a sudden we maybe free up 1 hour a week, and those really add up. That's 52 hours in the year, or that's a week off. So there's some small incremental changes which add up at the end, but to achieve them, there needs to be a focus as what the business is trying to do. What the business is trying to do, so there's balance between profit and lifestyle. So maybe what might come out of the business is how you're going to define business success. So sometimes we say, well, success for me is seeing a really smart looking group of cattle in the pen at market for sale. If that's success, then that's great. The reality check is, well, is that providing you enough income to achieve what you want to do personally and look after the family and so on? So those with a business mindset may put success on a working week, so the hours they work in the week, and achieving a financial goal. So that's normally pounds per hectare or pounds profit. Another way to account for it is pounds per hour worked. And we certainly see that within dairy at the minute. A really nice sort of KPI that's coming out of the industry is comparing different farming systems on what do they earn pounds per hour worked. Because your time is valuable and it definitely needs to be accounted for. And what you do with the time is up to you. So looking at that in context is a nice way of comparing different people's businesses. Someone that looks like they're working really hard, well, if they're earning the money, maybe that's okay. But if they're not earning the money per hour worked, then there's a reality check there. And I suppose all these sorts of things, it's maybe good to put into context. And when we come into succession and into thinking about the next generation, we suddenly add another level, another layer. But I think if you're dealing with an individual that knows what they want to achieve personally, then going to the next stage of succession and planning for the next generation, there's a little bit of clarity because they know what they want. And so then they're prepared to think about how that fits in with other sides of the family. If you're not sure what, if the individual's not sure what their position is and what they want to achieve, then you've just got a lot of unknowns. So you've got to start to tie those unknowns down, and people have got to be prepared to stand up and be confident in what they want so that you can start to work with other people in that.
Just thinking about that succession thing, in some ways what you do now is part of what was your succession planning with your parents at the farm.
Yeah, so Farm at Home wouldn't be big enough, or it's not big enough to support two families. So we certainly have diversified and removed all the cattle enterprise and conversion of what was an indoor silage clamp into a sort of commercial storage unit has been very successful. And that's given us a little bit of security for the future. And has also realised the value of our farm being close to a main road, which is a real annoyance when it comes to stock movements, but is an attribute and asset when it comes to access and transport. So that's given a little bit of security to income on the farm and a little bit of security to future for the parents. But again, the farm's not big enough for two families. So I had an opportunity to develop a business that will sit alongside it, and we haven't got ultimate clarity onto where that takes us. The parents have got an idea or a date for their retirement, and we're still pretty open to options as to where we do what we do with that business, in terms of whether we let someone else come in to manage it or whether I run that alongside what I'm doing now.
I'm going to bring in Tom here, because we spoke earlier about your succession planning on the farm here. Tell me about what you did.
So when I came back to the farm, because I was an engineer when I left school for 5 or 6 years, then I decided to go off and do the New Zealand travel around, looking around. And then when I did came home, I had my own ideas. And when I sat down with mother and father, I wanted to run a side of the business differently to what they was running it before. So they gave me sole charge of the sheep enterprise with limitations. I had to work for certain luxury items by lifting lamb percentages or selling more lambs or something like that to get an aluminium yard or a combi clamp or something like that. And then they concentrated on the beef side of the business, and I didn't get too involved in that. So that worked. And saved a lot of arguments, I think, in the long run.
And do you have a 5-year plan with your parents, and have you worked on it?
We do have we do have a little 5-year plan, but it's not written down. It's sort of discussed between ourselves. I know that they want to retire in well, they keep saying they're going to retire in the next couple of years, but that keeps moving. I know where I want to head with the sheep side of the business. And when they do retire, that I would have to find someone to replace them and run the cattle side of the business, because I like the sheep side of the business, really.
But when you're sitting there listening to James and what he just said, does that give you ideas?
Yes, it does. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's like taking to the next step to grow the business to where I could probably employ a shepherd as well. But just waiting for that opportunity to come around, really. There's definitely bits in the business that you enjoy and bits you don't enjoy.
James, what is your vision for the future of the sheep industry?
I think there will only be a positive vision for the future of the sheep industry. We had an interesting meeting here at O'Hare Mead Farm yesterday, and one of the members of our discussion group who travelled up from Exeter, his father knew Tom's father, because Tom's father, or grandfather actually, Tom,
yeah,
I think it was, used to send all the sheep from this farm down to Exeter, where they would graze on the arable crops, adding fertility to those soils before returning back up here for the winter. And then your dad made the comment, something like, you know, once they once the round bale was invented,
yeah,
that all that changed. So farmers here are able to provide their own winter fodder and therefore keep sheep up here, and that relationship was lost. We're not too far to think about some of those relationships being formed again between the arable sector and the livestock sector. We know the arable sector in terms of their income per hectare without subsidy is in a break-even position and not much better on the whole. Environmental schemes will add so much, but there's going to be a lot of land in between the margins. So those relationships can only improve, or will only have to improve, for the benefit of both people. We've just, out of interest, have done some little bit of benchmarkings, just some model farms, just some scenarios to see where we could take a 100 hectare sheep farm, let's say, and if we look at the differences between wintering just on grass, housing, using a forage crop, or taking the ewes off farm to an arable farm for sort of 3.5 to 4 months, so 100, 120 days, the arable farm scenario where those ewes leave the farm allows that sheep producer to carry an extra 200 ewes on that farm compared to any of the other scenarios, and do so at a cost which is less than that of housing and less than that of growing a forage crop. So I'm not saying that's for everyone, but the return of the mixed enterprise and the building of those relationships will only be positive. There's a few challenges to overcome, but none of those are particularly big. So I think by forming those relationships, that will be incredibly positive, and will deliver a lamb which will have a super low carbon footprint and be a truly sustainable source of food.
Well, that's a good place to finish. Thanks, James and Tom, for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Ian.